Hey, this week, Bez Hashem, next week, it's one of the things that we're looking toward as we prepare for the week is that there is a fast day coming up next week, and everyone seems to know that. Of course, there is Asara B'Teves. What people do not know always is that there are, in fact, three fast days. In the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, they would observe three fast days on Ches Teves, Tes Teves, and Yud Teves. Each of those days was a fast day. Shulchan Aruch records Tes Teves, he says he's not exactly sure why, but it was a fast day. Ches Teves was for the translation of the Torah, the Septuagint, and the Tes Teves, the popular suggestion is that it was the death of Ezra HaSofer. So, and then of course you have Asara B'Teves for the Kibush of Yerushalayim. The question is, what exactly is the connection between those three events? You know, meaning there's no such thing as coincidence. If we have something on three consecutive days, it seems that there should be some sort of connection between them. We know that the Jewish calendar has like a personality to it. You know, Mishenichnas Adar Marbin B'Simcha, Mishenichnas Av Mimatin B'Simcha. There's a certain sense that you get from different parts of the Jewish calendar. So what do these three fast days have in common that link to each other? Turning to the Parsha, Torah tells us that when Yaakov has to bring the entire family down to Mitzrayim, Ve'es Yehuda shalach lefanav lahoros lefanav Goshna. Yehuda was sent lahoros. That was his job. What does that mean? So says Rashi, lahoros lefanav kitargumo. Lifnos lo makom ulahoros heich yisashiba. To make sure that there's some land that they can occupy and figure out how to best habitate that land, how to best start a community in this new place that the Jewish people are going to be. Umidrash Agada, Lahoros Lefanav Lasakin Lo Beis Talmud, Shemisham Teitzei Hora'a. That Lahoros is Lashon of Hora'a, of Psak Halacha, and therefore he needed to establish a yeshiva, because it used to be that the primary goal of, or the primary focus of one's learning was to be able to have Hora'a, to be Lasuke Shvaitza Alibi de Hilcha, so that used to be in style. So the idea, Lahoros Lefan of Goshna, was to develop a yeshiva where you're going to be able to have Hora'a emerge from the yeshiva. Mitzrayim clearly was not equipped with the yeshiva, but L'chavra, the first pshat's a little bit, you know, to figure out the living arrangements, they had Yosef there for that. You know, and not only that, Yaakov was late because he went L'ktzot Sarazim Shnot Avram Zakenu Be'er Sheva. So apparently there were things that were occupying Yaakov Avinu that were not only Torah related, meaning setting up this these places to live, chopping down wood, chopping down a tree. What was all of this about? What was Yaakov's concern? The Torah concern, I get. What were these other concerns that he was particularly nervous about? And then, actually prior to that, Yosef tells his brothers, after revealing his identity to his brothers, and you know, when the charade is up, and he says, you know, and Yosef, he tells them, gives them instructions, al tirgazu badarach, that when they go back, they shouldn't be tirgazu. So what does that mean? Rashi quotes three pshatim. Rashi says, "Al tisasku b'dvar halacha, so tiragiz aleichem haderech." That travel is going to be too difficult if you're engaged in dvar halacha as you travel. So don't be engaged in heavy learning of halacha when you travel. Just make sure that you are accomplishing and you're advancing in your travel. Davar acher, al tafsiu psir gasa. Rashi says that they shouldn't take large steps. And then Rashi quotes the third pshat, l'fi pshuto, shal mikra yeshlomer l'fi shayin nechlamim, hayadoik shema yarivu b'derech al dvar mechiroso, l'svakeach ze im ze v'lomer al yodcho nimkar, ata siparta loshon hara alav, v'gram talanu l'sinaso, that they're going to start playing the blame game. That after now they've been humiliated. Yosef, they thought for all these years probably that they had the right psak. They got together a Beis Din, that yeshiva's Beis Din, and they paskin that Yosef deserved what he got. And now they've been shown that Hashkacha paskined against them, and that they were wrong about him, and they were wrong about the psak. So they're going to start blaming each other. How did this happen? No, it's because you were the one that started all the sinna. You're the one that started Lashon Hara. You're the one that had the idea. So he didn't want them to start living in the past and getting upset at each other about what could have, what should have. I understand that pshat. That makes a lot of sense, considering the emotional, trauma that they've just experienced of realizing that their whole plan in life and their whole mahalich was just off. But those first two pshatim are a little bit unusual. Not to learn halacha would be so bad if they learned a little bit on the road, that he had to warn them about that. That was something that became a heightened concern, not to learn on the derech. And bechlal, what's psiagasa about? What's he worried about? You know, they're going to strain a hamstring or something? Like, what was he worried about if they take a psiagasa? So Rav Soloveitchik used to say that if a Jew wants a map for how to succeed in Galus, for how to achieve survival and really thriving through Galus, one has to look at Yosef. Because Yosef was not just a Jew in Galus, he was really the first Jew in Galus, and he was all alone. He had nobody there, and somehow he still remained loyal to everything that he grew up with. So it could be that what Al-Derek Drush, obviously, that what Yosef was doing was he was coming from the position of someone who had been there, someone who had handled Galus, someone who had survived a couple of decades already in Mitzrayim. And he now knew that his brothers and his father were going to be facing this brand new challenge. And Yosef was trying to give them a roadmap of how to make it in Galus. And what he was suggesting were actually three distinct suggestions, each of which is alluded to by certain things that he told them at this important time. First suggestion that he gives is that they shouldn't become so enthralled with the culture around them that they're interested in impressing, that they define success by, if there's a Jew that makes it on a reality show or something, or some competition, then, like, that's the biggest deal. You know, people call it Kiddush Hashem. I don't know. Is it a Kiddush Hashem? It is. It's a thing. But, like, ooh, we have to, we've now made it in their society. Can you imagine if a frum Jew becomes a famous actor or becomes singer or something like that that's accepted by the culture around us, we get way too excited about impressing the culture around us. We put too much stock in the values of the society, just the culture. Forget about the values, the culture of the society around us. And maybe that's the first thing that Yosef is warning them. He's telling them the job of not becoming entrapped by the society around us is not to take a psiagasa. What does psiagasa represent? Psiagasa is like a strut in your step. You know, that a person should never walk around Galus as if he belongs, as if this, to have this confidence, to walk with a certain sense of arrogance. You should carry yourself in Galus as Yosef did, as a nar ivri eved. Right? That's how he was described. He was clearly different. He was not someone who looked like he belonged. He was different than everybody else. And that's perhaps why Yaakov is worried about the homes. He wasn't worried about, who's going to install the internet, before he moves in, because how could you possibly move? That wasn't his focus. He wanted to make sure that the homes were sufficiently separate and different from the Egyptian homes. And maybe that's the first of the three fasts, of the Ches, Tes, and Yud, the translation of the Torah. Translation of the Torah is a wonderful thing on a certain level, meaning, every 7.5 years they celebrate the Siyum HaShas and they celebrate Art School, right? That's always the two points of focus of every Siyum HaShas. And it's worthy of celebration, because as Rav David Cohen said in the video last night, there wouldn't be tens of thousands of people making a Siyum HaShas had it not been for Art School. But we do have to realize that it comes with a certain cost. And particularly the initial translation of the Torah came with a great cost. What's the cost of that? The cost of that is that I don't think it's still popular, but it used to be whatever hotel you would check into, anywhere in the country, you open up the drawer, and there is a Bible in the drawer. And the five books of Moses are part of that Bible, and they're translated, obviously all Chavdal, Sefer Tanakh, and then some, are part of that Bible. But it's translated and becomes accessible and available. And when a Jew has a conversation with a Christian, for example, there's certain common ground to talk about in terms of the religious texts that we read. And it was seen by the Chachamim as a reason to fast, because it's through that that the Hellenistic culture began to make inroads in the Jewish community. The non-Jews began to discuss ideas of Emunah and culture with their Jewish neighbors, and there was common ground to talk about. Seeing the genius of the Jewish people, non-Jews began a dialogue, and ideas were flowing in both directions. And when we lose that sense of being separate and different from society, from culture, from the culture around us, we open ourselves up to a lot of trouble. There is a great value in not walking around gullus with a psia gasa. I remember when a particular tragedy, I'm not going to mention which one right now, but when a particular tragedy happened, people, not tragedy, but it was seen by the world as a tragedy, people were saying that, the people who this happened to deserved it because they were anti-Semitic, and this is something that we should celebrate. And Moreno Rav Shechter said, we shouldn't. We have to remember we're in Gullus. We don't talk about it. We don't talk like this publicly. If millions of people are sad about something that happened, even if we think historically it's justified, we don't walk around talking like that because we're in Gullus. And a Gullus Jew has to realize that I don't run this place. I don't belong. I don't have that extra strut in my step like I'm the boss, like I'm the person, that we have to be very, very careful when we're in Gullus. A Jew has to have that mentality, has to remember. A Jew in Gullus has to remember that he's in Gullus. Throughout history, it's happened that we weren't given the opportunity to forget. In Gullus America, we've been given the opportunity to forget that we're in Gullus until we're no longer given that opportunity to forget. Until society around us reminds us that no matter what, there are so many that still view us in a negative way and are still going to react very negatively or act in a very, very harmful way toward us. So that's perhaps the first message that Yossi wants to send. The second message is that if you want to survive in Gullus, Talmud Torah has to be there. Yosef sends a message, I remember the Egla Arufa, meaning I still define myself by the last sugya I learnt with my father. And maybe that's again, Al Derech Drush, where he's telling them, Al Tirgazu B'Derech, the way Rashi says, don't be engaged in Dvar Halacha on the Derech, on the road back to Eretz Yisrael. Because it's not only on the Derech that we learn Torah. It's not that you can't learn on the road. It's that don't reserve your learning for the road back to Eretz Yisrael. When you come to Mitzrayim, you should realize the high level of learning has to be maintained in Mitzrayim as well. That's why historically the Torah center of the center of Torah Shebaal Peh that we still draw our sustenance from and that we celebrated last time was Talmud Bavli. It is a Torah of Gullus where Torah can thrive. Rav Soloveitchik said he believes that if there would have been a 14th Ani Mamin, if he had an opportunity to write the Ani Mamin, he would have added a 14th Ani Mamin, that Vayibin Soa Aron, that the Torah can thrive wherever it goes. That there's nowhere. People for many generations thought that America was going to be, had no chance of Torah survival in America. Torah can't possibly thrive in America. Torah can thrive anywhere, but it has to become a priority in order for Torah to thrive anywhere. And that's why Yaakov sends Yehuda to build the Beis Medrash. It was a key component to survival in Gullus. And maybe that's the idea of the fast of the ninth of Teves, the death of Ezra HaSofer. Ezra HaSofer brought a tremendous Torah revival to the Jewish people after Gullus Bavel. He's the one who set up the system of Anshei Knesset HaGedola, and who are quoted in the very first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos as warning, Asu Siag LaTorah, to always protect the Torah, put a fence around the Torah. Ezra was so respected as the father of the Torah Shebaal Peh that over 20 generations after his death, there's a Gemara Menachos that refers to a certain person as Rabbi Ezra, Bar Bered Rabbi Avtulus, Dehu Asiri L'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Dehu Asiri L'Ezra. Over 20 generations later, the Gemara is busy tracing someone's yichus back to Ezra HaSofer. Because Ezra HaSofer represents the survival of Torah in Gullus. And we only survived from succumbing to Greek culture because of a system of serious Torah learning that Ezra set up. It's something that's important to remind ourselves, and as Rabbanim, to remind people that we're in contact with, our future Talmidim and our Chaverim and our community members, that a good Jew means doing a lot of things. It means Shmiras HaMitzvos, it means being a kind person, it means making a Kiddush Hashem wherever you go, it means a lot of things. But it's impossible to achieve being a good Jew if a person doesn't have serious Talmud Torah in his life in some way or another. It doesn't have to be Daf Yomi or whatever, but a person has to have serious Talmud Torah in his life in some way or another, and that's critical to surviving in Galus. Otherwise, we just fall away. And finally, the third message that Yosef was trying to perhaps tell his brothers, that if you want to survive in Galus, you have to have an eye toward Geula. You have to realize that Galus is followed by Geula. We have to be Mitzapeli Yeshua. In very real terms, Yosef tells them, don't fight with each other on the road, meaning now's not a time to fight. When you're going to Galus, fighting is extremely dangerous. Fighting is what brought us to Galus. Sinas Chinam is what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not just that Sinas Chinam is such a terrible Aveira that it's as bad as Avodah Zarah Gilui Reish V'Chilul. No, it means that we can't have a Geula unless we're an Am. And we need to prepare for Geula by maintaining a certain sense of an Am. Think back to yesterday, to the Sima Shas. First of all, I find it interesting that the experience itself, I don't know, maybe other people don't share this, but I find that being at the Sima Shas, it's almost like disappointing, because you look around when great Talmid Chacham are speaking and there's a lot going on, and no one seems interested. There are thousands of people running around just, talking and moving and I understand it's very, very cold. But no one seems, but in retrospect, there were some very, very powerful moments, and it's much more inspiring in retrospect than it actually is when you're there. But it's worth going to have that to have those moments in retrospect. But one of the powerful things about it is just the sheer number of people, just that there are over 90,000 Jews that come together for anything. And the fact that it's a celebration of Torah, and that there are so many Jews coming together, and I was down on the field by the dancing, and I look at one point, and there's a guy a chassid in full garb holding my right hand, and then another guy is like a litvish, gor yeshivish kind of holding my left hand, and the modern Orthodox rabbi, and it's a very powerful thing when there's a certain sense of achdus, when total strangers essentially can come together and can feel that sense of achdus. So we need to be an am in order to have a geula. So Yaakov cannot go to Galus without first keeping his eye on what's going to bring geula, or keeping his eye on the fact that there's going to be a geula. Rav Shachter writes in Bikvei Atzon, based on the Ramban in his Hakdamat Sefer Shmos, that the Sefer Shmos is called Sefer Geula. The Ramban says, not because we leave Mitzrayim in Sefer Shmos, it's because at the end of Sefer Shmos we build a Mishkan. The Mishkan is the definition of geula. Mikdash is the definition of geula. Yaakov can't go to Galus without first cutting the arazim that are going to build the Mishkan, that are going to be the basis, the Briah HaTichon, for what needs to be built. Galus is only manageable when we realize that there's going to be a geula. And maybe that's what the fast of the 10th of Teves is. It's not about what is, but it's about what will be. Right? That's a famous word from the Chassam Sofer. That's why the 10th of Teves is a fast that's Docha Shabbos, because the 10th of Teves, unlike every other fast, is not a fast of mourning what was in the past, but what will be, and a recognition that something will be in the future. I ain't shum in the Chuvas Chacham Sofer for the full explanation, but the point is that the 10th of Teves, even when it happened, nothing really happened. It was about that 18 months later, the events of Shavuos and Batamos were going to happen. It set up what was going to happen. So to survive in Galus, we have to be very careful in these three areas, to live with a difficult balance of being successful within an outside world, but not becoming so enthralled by it, so taken by it, so impressed by it. You know, it's a very difficult thing, you know, to be so impressed by whatever Goyim value, you know, whatever sports stars, whatever, you know, just to so impressed by people who've made it on Wall Street or whatever power it is that people look to. We have to realize that that's not us. We're not part of that. We're supposed to be separate from that. And second, we have to again commit ourselves and recommit ourselves to Torah learning, and you know what comes out of an event like yesterday is really remarkable in terms of the commitment to Torah learning that comes out. There was a prominent YU family that was highlighted on the video, and about how it was life changing when they had the last Yom HaShoah, and then Rabbi Friend repeated the story, taking his own name out of it, but repeated the entire about how it could change a person. A person could be pushed in a direction of wanting to learn Torah, and their opportunities abound for Talmud Torah. But we don't have a good excuse to answer negatively when we're asked La'achar me'vashrim kavati itim l'Torah. And then finally, and this is maybe the thing that we don't hear enough about, is to really genuinely be mitzapah li'Yeshua. You know, after the attack in Muncie last week, there was tremendous confusion and sadness, as there should be, and people, you know, right away started saying, so this is like pre-war Germany, and this is we should just move to Eretz Yisrael right now because look what's happening. Everything is you know, we can sense that Gullus is turning, that a Gullus that seemed so great is turning pretty badly for us now at this point. I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know whether these are, you know, this is a rough patch and we're going to get through this and we'll have many, many more decades of prosperity in America. But what we do know, and what we knew before these attacks, and these haven't changed anything, fundamentally what we do know is that no Gullus has ever ended well for the Jewish people, and that the Jewish future is not here. That we know for sure. The Jewish future is in Eretz Yisrael. We always knew that. We still know that. A person has to recognize that that's the goal. The goal is Geula. What we can do to bring the Geula, big discussion amongst our leaders and our Gedolim. The things, whether moving to Eretz Yisrael hastens the Geula or doesn't hasten the Geula, okay, there's room for disagreement in very high places on that issue. I personally obviously believe that it does hasten the Geula, because we're showing the Ribbono Shel Olam that we're interested in all the mitzvot Hatzlius Baaretz. We want to live in an environment of Ruchnius. We're coming back to the palace, so bring the palace back, bring the centerpiece back. But what everyone agrees is that engagement in Torah and mitzvot is going to hasten the Geula, and that a person has to be mitzapah li'Yeshua. And what everyone equally agrees is that our job is to be sure, everyone, I mean all Gedolei Torah in the history of the Jewish people, is that our job is to be Shomrei Torah Mitzvot to the best of our ability. I'm a little bit skeptical about those who say, you know, because there was an attack, we have to pick up and just move to Eretz Yisrael, because if you do that without a plan for, you know, I've seen people go and say, wherever, it doesn't matter as long as it's in the Holy Land. And I appreciate that, because believe me, I appreciate that Avas Eretz Yisrael. But I've seen people go, and then, you know, and they didn't choose the right neighborhood for their families, and none of the kids are from anymore. And it's happened to more than one person, more than a dozen people. It's something that's all too common. A person has to have a plan, first and foremost, for our Shmiras HaTorah and mitzvos, and figure out how that plan is going to work to be able to hasten the Geula to the best of our ability, but always to keep that eye on the prize of being Mitzapah Yeshua. I think those are some of the messages of this coming week and some of the messages of Yosef HaTzadik.